This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When I'm on the land, a lot of times I just stop. I stop. And I look. I look off in the distance. And I say to myself, are my eyes seeing what my great-grandparents saw? Are my eyes seeing the same landscape? And I used to listen to their stories, and I hear their stories and their love for the land.
Documentary filmmaker Errol Morris once said, "What interests me about documentary is the fact that you don't know how the story ends at the onset, that you're investigating with a camera, and the story emerges as you go along." This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with two documentary filmmakers whose new films take divergent paths in telling the tale of a planet in peril. First, we hear from Andrea Fuller, the producer of They Say It Can't Be Done, which profiles innovations for a better environment tomorrow. Then we talk to Jennifer Abbott about her film, The Magnitude of All Things, which goes around the world to lay bare the emotional impact of climate change. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Andrea Fuller. Andrea is a partner in the production company Just Add Firewater, and she's the producer of the new documentary that's coming out March 23rd, They Say It Can't Be Done. Andrea, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Oh, Alex, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you doing this on audio because I have really terrible COVID hair right now.
I think we all have had plenty of COVID hair days this last year. So what's kind of the mission that you're trying to solve with this film?
Absolutely. So this film, first of all, it's been a rough few years for everybody. This film takes a very optimistic tone of kind of how we can solve some of the world's most pressing problems. So while the film is technically about innovation and regulation, it's ultimately about human ingenuity, human power, and people that are just getting to work, getting it done with some mind-blowing innovation that's going to save us all.
Let's go through the four pillars of this film. Categories that the film highlights are hunger, organ transplant shortages, ocean sustainability, and climate change. Climate change is kind of the overarching theme of so many of the work that we chronicle here on Sea Change Radio. How have the filmmakers tried to give it a fresh angle?
Right. So the fresh angle is, I feel like the angle that's out there right now is this is a terrible problem and we don't know what to do about it. The angle that we're going at is, yes, this is a terrible big problem that we all need to be involved in solving. But look, here are some people that you may not have heard of that are actually developing solutions that could potentially work. So climate change, we have Dr. Klaus Lackner and his partner Alan Wright for the Center for Negative Carbon Emissions, who've developed, for lack of a better word, this plastic tree that removes carbon from the atmosphere. They have a workable prototype. And what we talk about in the film is kind of, in this case, how can regulation step in and create a market for their product so it can be widely used throughout the world? Again, it's a piece of the solution, but a very important piece. We talk about a firm called Catalina Sea Ranch, who is doing aquaculture off the coast of California. They, along with their partners at Primary Ocean Producers, have figured out a way to provide sustainable protein in a way that not only can feed a large population, but can clean the water column and reduce our impact on the climate. So, you know, that's what we're trying to get out there with this film is like, look, we have solutions. There are brilliant people that are working on them. You know, how can we work, do everything in our power to get those solutions out there?
So let's talk about Arizona State scientist Klaus Lackner. So his synthetic tree, how scalable is something like this in your mind after watching the film?
Yeah, so Dr. Lackner has a great line in the film where he says, yeah, to make an impact, we would have to find space for about 100 million of these things to make an impact. But then again, somehow we have found space for over 1 billion of cars. So while it seems daunting, it is very doable.
And how does he suggest we start rolling these out? We always talk about how the market dictates how things go, and people wanted to drive. People wanted to get from A to B. Now we want to fix problems in our atmosphere and erase excess CO2. This would have to be a massive undertaking. Where does he foresee some of the low-hanging fruit for, quote-unquote, planting these trees?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because what the issue is here is some of our innovators in the film are saying that, you know, the government and regulation are keeping us, you know, from scaling where we need to go to make an impact. In his case, we need the government to create a market for carbon in order to make his product viable. So when that carbon market happens, that will create the market for a solution like he has. So, you know, this is a case where we really need to feel the pain enough to take bold steps with the government to create this market for carbon. And that's when his innovation will really be able to take hold.
So, Andrea, how can people watch this film before we dive into the details anymore? I mean, that's always kind of everybody's recommending movies and series to everybody, but then they scramble to Google and try to find out how they can watch it.
Well, you can go to our website, theysayitcan'tbedone.com. You can watch the trailer, and then right now you can pre-order it on iTunes, but it will be available for download on iTunes starting March 23rd and with a number of cable providers. So that will be on our website as well. After about 90 days, it will roll out to other streaming providers. So we will constantly keep it updated on our website where you can view the film. And we're very excited that we just got a contract with Japanese public television, and it will be actually airing there this summer.
And it's a visually very beautiful film, so it'd be nice to see it in the theaters one of these days too, I imagine.
Oh my gosh, we can't wait to get back to the theaters, Alex. We would love to be there.
Yes, well, we won't jinx that.
I was raised in Alabama, and my friends in Alabama are not into a veggie burger. They're not into vegan sausage. My friends in Alabama want real steak, they want real hamburgers, they want real trucks. That's just what they want. Think about a cow. A cow is hanging out for 2 years on this planet. Muscle and fat is growing on the cow's bones. The cow's sucking up resources, excreting manure that's going into our waterways. And we do that to eventually kill the cow, cause a little bit of suffering, unfortunately. Then we eat a hamburger and we grill it, you know, on the 4th of July. It doesn't have to be that way. Instead, you can take a single cell from that cow, and then you can grow your hamburgers, you can manufacture your steak, and it can taste even better.
We are here in the kitchen or product development area of Just, and about to make something very incredible here. It is a cultured chicken chorizo and mung bean egg omelet. And I mean, who doesn't love a good chicken chorizo?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and that was a little excerpt from They Say It Can't Be Done, a new documentary film coming out on March 23rd. And the film's producer, Andrea Fuller, is with me. So, Andrea, you were talking about regulation and how governments would have to play a key role in something like this synthetic tree solution from Dr. Lackner at Arizona State. Let's look at regulation and the issue of hunger, because that's discussed a little bit in the film as well. You talk to some people who are in cell culture technology. That's obviously kind of a gray area now in the regulatory field. What do they have to say about the role of the FDA, etc.?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one. Josh Tetrick and his company, Eat Just, have developed a technology to basically grow meat from the cell of the animal, which means zero impact on the environment and zero cruelty to animals.
And it doesn't just have to be a cow, right? It could be like a fish or something like that, right?
Yes, in the film you can see folks eating a chicken nugget while the chicken is walking around.
See, that's very PETA friendly, right?
Very PETA friendly. You know, in this case, it's a little different, right? Because, again, regulation is there to keep us safe. And, you know, the FDA plays a huge role in keeping us safe. But also sometimes, as you'll see in the film, regulation is there to protect current entrants in the market. So, you know, there's a line is, you know, who doesn't want to see new meat? The makers of old meat. So again, it's really trying to get people to think critically about, okay, why is this regulation in place? Is it there to keep us safe? Or is it there to protect folks that are currently in the market and to keep other innovators out of the market? So again, we just, you know, we want people to really think critically about what's happening here. So as a result, in the US, we cannot get cell cultured meat, but in Singapore, you can now. So just announced that they will be growing and selling cell cultured meat there, but we do not have access to that yet.
And maybe you can kind of tie together how climate change and hunger come together at this nexus here with a company like Just.
Right. With Just, you get a twofer, right? You don't get the impact of large-scale agriculture on the climate. And we can feed a lot of people for a lot less money, high quality protein. And with almost, 9 billion people on the planet in the next few years, we're going to have to figure out how to do that. We just don't have enough land. Our environment can't take it. And, you know, quite frankly, as everybody knows, there's real issues around the treatment of animals in these large-scale factory farming operations. So if we can solve many problems with this one technology, you know, why wouldn't we do that?
Yes, we've chronicled a lot of similar lab-grown meat stories on Sea Change Radio over the years. It's something that I'm personally quite interested in seeing developed. I guess the real holy grail is to make it taste just as good.
So I did not actually eat it on the shoot, but from what the crew says, it actually tastes better than the meat that you buy in the store.
Well, that sounds very promising. So, all right, how about this as a transition? I guess the real question would be, can these lab-grown meats, can they start developing organ meats like liver and other offal products that we like to eat in more ethnic foods like chopped liver? Which it brings me to our next subject, organ transplant. So the organ transplant shortage is real, and it is one that 122,000 patients are direly aware of. So tell us, Andrea, about Dr. Anthony Atala and the work that he does in the next generation of organ transplants. This is technology that's been around in some form or another for decades, but we're almost in a new phase of this technology, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm telling you, like on the scale of mind-blowing innovations, which is what we were trying to uncover with this documentary, what is happening at the Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine with Dr. Anthony Atala and Dr. Julie Alexson will blow your mind. So, you know, kind of the idea behind the work that they're doing is like, what if we could move from treatment to cures, right? Instead of you have a bum kidney, you need to go on many different medications, you need to get dialysis. What if I could just take your cells and print you a new kidney, pop it back in, and you're good to go? Like, that is what they're doing at the center. They've pioneered printing of human skin. They have developed kind of hollow type organs like urethras. And now they're moving on to solid organs like kidneys and liver. So the innovations that are coming out of that center, seriously, Alex, will blow your mind. And, you know, on the regulatory side of this one, it's really interesting because, you know, This is something that you want the government and regulators to be involved in, right?
Especially if you're getting an organ transplant, right?
Exactly, right? Like, things that are going into your body, right? And, you know, I know from Dr. Alexson, who's kind of works on their regulatory side, that they have an excellent relationship with the FDA. And the two of them, they work together very closely and actually make things better. But where they run into problems is, you know, the technology and the science is moving so quickly. And so things don't always fit into neat, nice little buckets. And that kind of slows things down sometimes. So again, how do we figure out how to adapt our systems, right? So we can keep up with the pace of science, yet keep people safe. Again, none of this is easy. And we don't pretend in the documentary that this is really easy, non-complicated stuff. But we ask the question, right? Like, how do we do this? I mean, if we could move from a healthcare system that is all around treatment to one that could just be all about cures. I mean, imagine how much money that would save. Imagine how much pain that would save. And, you know, it could be a total game changer. And these folks at the Center for Regenerative Medicine are doing it. I mean, it is unbelievable. And just like, it's to me, it's the one of the most exciting parts of this documentary.
Well, we shouldn't give too much more away, but folks should definitely try to tune in when it comes out March 23rd. It's called They Say It Can't Be Done. Andrea Fuller, thanks so much again for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Oh my gosh, thanks so much for having us. I listened to some of your episodes and they're excellent, and so I really appreciate it.
When I talk to people about this, they always say we need to have hope, otherwise we won't do anything, and we can't just tell these negative stories, and we need to tell the positive stories. No, we need to tell the truth. We can't hide things just because it's not hopeful. It's like people, they can't do anything without hope.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jennifer Abbott. Jennifer is a documentary filmmaker, and her new film is called The Magnitude of All Things. Jennifer, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So The Magnitude of All Things, why don't you give us a snapshot of what you were trying to convey with this film, Jennifer?
Sure. Well, the film came about when I was in my garden on Salt Spring Island about 7 years ago. And I looked up, it was July, and I thought it was snowing. Then I realized it wasn't snowing at all, but actually that was ash, and it was ash falling from a forest fire that was nearby that I knew was climate change related. So it was really in that moment the idea of the film came about, because I recognized the feeling I had was grief, and it was grief for the changing world around us. And I decided then to make this film that has two parallel narratives. One, which goes around the world talking to people about their feelings about climate change, and especially those in the climate front lines who are experiencing it firsthand. And the second narrative is the story of my sister's passing and death, and how she came to terms with her deepest fears and sorrows. So the film really is about the emotional and psychological dimensions of the climate crisis, and it comes to it through these two parallel narratives.
Yeah, so how did the pandemic affect your film? Did you, because it's made all over the world, and for people who haven't seen it, it's very lush, very beautiful to look at, and it's filmed in some of the most remote parts of the world. I assume most of this was shot before the world kind of shut down.
That's right. So we were very fortunate in the sense that we did most of our filming in the first half of 2019. And so when the world shut down, we were mostly in post-production and had already traveled to four continents and 10 climate front lines by that point in time, including the Amazon, the far north, Nunatsiavut, the Great Barrier Reef, Tasmania, and, you know, Stockholm, Sweden, where Greta Thunberg has her school strike, Extinction Rebellion, London. Anyway, I could go on, but we certainly did a lot of traveling that year.
So maybe you can kind of contrast some of the examples in the film of communities that are kind of stuck because of the climate crisis and others where there are policies that we can put in place that could reverse some of the effects of climate change for these people.
Right. Well, there are, unfortunately, certain impacts of climate change that are baked into the system, right? And so no matter what we do today forward, it is predicted that Kiribati, the Republic of Kiribati, is going to be underwater by 2100. In terms of Nunatsiavut, where we filmed in Canada's north, that's the southernmost Inuit community, and its average temperature rise has already been 4 degrees Celsius. So their landscape is in the process of melting, no matter what we do going forward. That said, I wouldn't say either of those communities have given up, by the way. They're looking at adaptations, they're looking at mitigation. And if you look at the situation with Kiribati, His Excellency, the former President Anote Tong, who we feature in our film, is just such an extraordinary and inspirational character who simply will not give up. Now, of course, there are things that we can do policy-wise that will turn things around. And, I think it's so interesting because I think Americans in particular are being shown the impact of government policy through this stimulus bill that was passed yesterday. It's like, wow, government policy actually can make a huge difference in people's lives. And for the last 40 years, we've been told otherwise by neoliberalism, which has demonized government and tried to get us to think about solving problems in terms of the private sector and corporations. I don't really believe corporations are going to get us out of this mess. They got us into it, and they're still acting in a very self-interested way, no matter what they may be saying. For example, we feature two traditional Wanneroo custodians in New South Wales in Australia, whose territory is being devastated by open-cut coal mining. There could be policies to curtail that. There could be policies that keep oil and gas and mining and monoculture agriculture out of the Amazon. We feature the Sapara community and the Kichwa community of the Amazon rainforest. We feature the Sapara Nation and the Kichwa Nation of the Amazon rainforest in our film, and they are certainly fighting these huge corporate interests. So that is another policy change that could happen, and certainly many are fighting to make sure it does happen. We feature Greta Thunberg in our film, and also Extinction Rebellion London, and certainly Fridays for Futures, Greta's organization, and Extinction Rebellion are really have quite brilliant strategies, the latter based in civil disobedience, trying to force governments to make the right decisions. So there's so much we can still do. It is not too late. I think the key, however, is to not think that the profound changes we need to happen are going to occur through individual actions or through thinking of ourselves as consumers. Yes, let's all drive electric cars and let's subsidize those for people who can't afford to. Or yes, let's all recycle. I'm not for a second suggesting we are not responsible and good consumers and also consume less. But ultimately, Our power lies as citizens, and it lies in joining in solidarity with other citizens to create system change, which challenges, 21st century extractive capitalism, which really, that might sound radical, but I'm sorry, all empirical evidence suggests that that system, economic system, has been really largely responsible for the climate crises that we now find ourselves enmeshed within.
Climate change, in a weird sort of way, asks a lot of humanity. We can't just say, well, made a mistake on that one, I guess we'll try again. It's actually taking ourselves to account. Who do we want to be as a species moving forward? How do we see ourselves differently within this web of relations that we have suddenly disrupted or harmed or destroyed? And what does it take to atone for the loss? How do we ever make right what we've done as a species when we talk about mass extinction? How do we make that right? I don't know if we can, but I think we have to have those conversations, because if we don't take the responsibility seriously, that won't lead to the transformative changes. So climate change calls on us to be different.
That was a clip from Jennifer Abbott's documentary film, The Magnitude of All Things. And I'm here with Jennifer now on Sea Change Radio.
So if people want to see this movie before it's officially released, they can follow the link on Sea Change Radio that we're going to be posting for the CineQuest virtual screenings.
That's right. And those are starting March 20th.
And you mentioned that you're releasing two documentaries this year. A lot of our listeners are probably familiar with the much heralded The Corporation. What's the basic thesis of The New Corporation in a nutshell?
Sure. Well, basically, The New Corporation is a lot like The Old Corporation, which, for people who saw that film, we diagnosed as an institutional psychopath, except that The New Corporation is more charming and has a message that is trying to convince us that they are our friends and that really we don't need government anymore to solve big problems. So we sort of dissect that message, and we explore the many existential crises we are currently facing in the world today and their links to corporations, to 21st century extractive capitalism, and also to neoliberalism, which sounds very academic and technical, but it's actually quite an engaging and entertaining film, and like the first one anyway, I hope viewers will agree.
The film The Magnitude of All Things, filmmaker Jennifer Abbott. Jennifer, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for your interest. Stay safe and well.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by James Brown.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.